Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
People were talking about my background. They kept saying I was just a hot-blooded Latina woman. It hurts my heart, it hurts my brain, it hurts my whole body. I was leaving Janice. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to do Christmas. I didn't want to do Thanksgiving. I was crumbling down.
Right, that's a clip from Lorena. All four episodes of that are streaming now on Amazon Video Prime. James joins us once again. The Lorena is Lorena Bobbitt, yes, as she was known then.
Yeah, Gallo, I think she goes by now.
Yeah, famous for one act of...
Yeah, for...
annoyance.
That's putting it mildly. So, I think it was 1993 in Virginia, she took a 12-inch knife and... sliced off her husband's penis.
Yeah.
And then threw it out a car window. And this documentary explores everything about the case. And I have only, like, I was a child, obviously, when that happened. I have the vaguest of memories of that sort of percolating even around our media sphere at the time. Mm. Because it became this huge talking point. Because, you know, it is a kind of a, it's a weird news story. The kind that gets, that goes viral before we even knew what the concept of virality meant when it comes to the media. But this, and this documentary understands that, right? So this is really, really good, right? That's, first of all, how I will describe this. Because as a documentary, it perfectly understands why you tune into this, right? And the reason why you tune into this is because a man gets his penis cut off. That is the selling point,
yes,
right? It's, it's unusual, it's bizarre, utterly so. And it is like a really arresting, right? As a thing that happens, because it doesn't happen every day.
Yeah.
And also because it basically, you know, the what happens thereafter to that part of his anatomy all goes right. So it's not this, horrific, tragic ending to it.
Because,
right?
I suppose, yeah, he got a huge amount of publicity afterwards.
Yeah, John Wayne is his
name.
And
it all worked, and then he became, I think, a porn star.
He did, yeah, amongst other things.
Yeah.
So that's why you tune in, right? Because it has this kind of, you know, I regret to use the word juicy, but this kind of really tantalizing plot, right?
Yeah.
But then actually the documentary reveals itself to be very astute and clever and interesting, right?
Okay.
So it's 4 hour long pieces, and you would think, you know, how much really mileage can you wring out of, a couple of inches of flesh, right? But essentially, it begins to explore the case in all of its different all the ramifications of it, including the media coverage and the sort of saturation of the story in the news media, and particularly in late night talk shows and like comedy.
Yeah.
And how Lorena Bobbitt became
a punchline. Yeah.
After spending years as a punching bag, because what you see in her is that she is this, a woman suffering under years of domestic abuse at the hands of her husband, and in doing so stays, because women stay, and one of the reasons why she stayed is because she was not a fully legal, citizen in the US. And they even go so far as there are two then trials that are taking place involving the Bobbitts, because she makes a claim against him that he had, you know, sexually assaulted her in spousal rape, I think it's called, and he obviously had his penis chopped off. So there are two different legal cases going on roughly at the same time. And at one point, Lorena is offered like a plea deal, and she refuses to accept it, even though, you know, everyone knows that she has done this because she admitted to doing so. But she refuses to accept because she'd be a felon, and felons can never become citizens of the United States. So this is a driving part of her identity. But it's just a really clever and engrossing look at kind of how, you know, how bizarre crimes sort of take off in the media to begin with. But then also kind of the role of women, and particularly women who are survivors of domestic abuse, how they are also exploited and forgotten by the media. Because, you know, you might remember if you were in the media, if you were of a media consuming age in 1993, you probably do remember this case because it was really like famous. But you probably don't remember the details about how she put up with years of abuse and how this was like a galvanizing moment where she just had had enough. And in a, you know, in a, well, I guess according to the courts anyway, in a moment of temporary insanity, she, you know, did this terrible thing. But the documentary explores the before and the after. And really what's fascinating is the talking head interviews with both of the Bobbitts. And you kind of, you know, you'll be sitting there wondering, why on earth has John Wayne Bobbitt consented to take part in this documentary? Because he does not come across well at all. He is not likable. He's a slimy kind of, he has aged terribly, right? And one of the kind of funny things about the documentary is they talk about
medical side effect of that procedure.
I suppose it was quite a stressful period in his life. But one of the points the documentary makes is the reason why, right, their story went viral is because it's unusual. The reason why it took hold is because they were both good looking, right? They were both these very media friendly looking people. She, this kind of fiery Latina, he, this blue eyed former Marine, you know, hunk, right? And because of that, he went on to, you know, star in pornographic films. He appeared on the Howard Stern radio show all the time and in TV bits all the time. He then went on to work in like a famous brothel in Nevada called Moonlight something. I can't quite remember. And all these different things. And you're looking at him going, you are just, I mean, you are taking this terrible thing that happened to you, but you are just turning it into an even worse thing at every turn. And he just comes across as this terrible person. Now, I would argue what she did is terrible.
Yes, indeed. Like but he became outside the country because the domestic abuse, I think, was rarely mentioned at the time, and he was cast as the victim.
Then. Yes, and she, right, she was, I guess, a victim. She definitely was a victim until she wasn't anymore.
Yeah.
And the story is really about how when you keep pushing at people and pushing them to breaking point, eventually they're going to reach for a knife.
Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting.
Yeah, honestly.
That is so interesting.
And it works really well.
Is it a spoiler to tell us where she is now, what she's doing?
I don't think so. No, because, I mean, when you see, so if you remember the case, you might remember the specific outcome of it. I won't go into the details of that because, you know, that is part and parcel. She is a very intriguing character, you know. She, when we meet her at the beginning of this documentary, she's like a nail technician in a salon, having spent 4 years married to John Wayne and suffering of that. And then when the trial is over, she kind of, you know, you would argue she totally turned her life around. She went back to college, she became a citizen, she got married, and she now works in a domestic abuse. She started her own domestic abuse sort of foundation and goes around specifically helping women who are survivors of domestic abuse. She also is very sort of aware of who she is because she still appears on talk shows from time to time and is sort of willing to play the part that the way, you know, that fundamentally this is a funny story, right? This is the story of a woman cutting off her husband's penis. And that is weird and unusual and funny. And you just can't, there's no getting over that. And she accepts that that is what she will ever, forever be known as. And she understands that in order to further her message of, like, you know, empowering women who have been suffering, that she has to accept the smirks and the jokes and the laughs that go with it.
Wow. Okay. Right. A couple of bits of TV news. Now, Lord of the Rings is going to appear on Amazon at some point.
And
we still don't know much about it, but there are rumours. Yes. So let's report all those unsatiated rumours.
So what we do know is that Amazon paid $1 billion to the Tolkien family in order to get the rights to it. And as part of that deal, they've also agreed to a guaranteed 5-season TV show. So it's coming and it's going to be obviously something like to rival a Game of Thrones in a fantasy world, right?
Yeah.
The problem is it's only 19 years since, or 18 years since the first Lord of the Rings movie came out. People still remember them very fondly and nobody necessarily wants to see that story again. So the rumour mill is suggesting that what we're actually going to get is a prequel story to those, which is going to be all about Aragorn, which is the Viggo Mortensen character from the Peter Jackson movies. But we also don't know because they are being really, really incredibly secretive about this.
Ah, yeah, of course they would.
To the sense that, so apparently the production is taking place currently, the writing stage anyway, in Santa Monica. And in order to even get into the building, you have to go through, you know, like fingerprint checks, and they have blacked out all the windows and nobody's going to find out anything. Now, all that is part of like hype building and
yes,
myth
course,
building
yeah.
as well. Like at the end of the day, it's a couple of people sitting at a computer. But you can understand that they want to, you know, bring something new out of this material, because frankly nobody wants to see them retreading Frodo's story yet again.
Yeah, okay, we shall see, I suppose. And no more Marvel TV shows on Netflix.
Yeah, so this is not that surprising, because they have cancelled every one of them in the lead up to this week when they finally cancelled Jessica Jones and The Defender. So Disney is setting up its own streaming platform that's going to come out later this year. I think it's called Disney Plus. And Marvel shows are sort of navigating towards there, but not these ones, because I guess Netflix has signed some sort of, you know, territorial deal on these specific characters. However, Marvel is going to go to another streaming service, because on Hulu, which is not yet available here, but I'm sure it will launch at some point, there are going to be four animated shows that are like kind of, we'll say, even more obscure characters, the likes of Hitmonkey, Tigra and Dazzler, MODOK and Howard
wow.
the Duck. Now, the funny part is that they're all going to cross over into a one, you know, all these characters are going to come together in a show that's going to be called The Offenders, which is a piss take on what is The Defenders, which was on Netflix when they brought all of their characters together. And when you hear these names, you mightn't recognise all the characters, but actually there are some good talent attached to it. So writing the Tiger and Dazzler is Chelsea Handler. MODOK is going to be written by Patton Oswalt, and Howard the Duck, which is probably the best known one because of that cult movie from the 80s with Leah Thompson, is going to be written by Kevin Smith. So, yeah, a pinch of salt is how I would approach these.
Okay, right. Two more shows to talk about after this break.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
It's a really nice place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like that on purpose.
Deborah said she lives with her daughter, Veronica. Is that you?
My mom said the guy she's going out with tonight is a doctor. Is that you?
It is me.
Hmm. You can look at that just fine with your eyes. You don't need to touch it. It's breakable.
Well, there you go. That's Dirty John. This is based on a true story.
Yes.
But it's a kind of a true crime.
It is.
Thing,
it's also
really.
An adaptation of a podcast from 2017 that was released by the LA Times and was a big kind of, you know, riding the serial wave of true crime podcasting, downloaded 10 million times, I think, in 2017. So chances are people who are listening are already familiar with the story. So this is a dramatized version of it, and it comes from a woman named Alexandra Cunningham, who whose biggest sort of title that you would know is Desperate Housewives. And
okay.
I think it's, if you liked Desperate Housewives, you're going to like this as well, right? Because it's cut from that kind of soapy Lifetime, you know, cloth, right? Now, I have been known to like shows like that as well. I love, you know, I love the American Crime Story, the People versus OJ. I even love the Versace one, not quite as much, but I did like it a lot. And this is in a similar vein, but not as good, right? So this is like a good filler while you're waiting for something else to come along, because it's not quite dirty enough, really, right? In the sense that you want it to be just that little bit more juicy or interesting than it actually turns out to be. Now, it's not bad, right? So you get this, the story essentially revolves around a woman named Deborah Newell, I think, who's played by Connie Britton, who people will know from everything that she's been in for years.
But even having Connie Britton in it gives it that kind of soapy aspect.
Yes,
really.
Definitely. Yes. Yeah. And she's a sort of, I guess, 40, maybe on the pushing 50 something divorcee in Newport Beach in California. She's a very wealthy and successful interior decorator, but struggling in the dating life. And there's a great montage of her going on all these dates with these terrible men that actually really sets the scene very well for why, when she meets John, who's played by Eric Bana, who's this handsome older, you know, well, 40 something man, suddenly she's, you know, very much like interested, and why she would be interested in him. But her two daughters, who are played by Juno Temple, who we heard there as Veronica, who is particularly good, as in the best you've ever seen her. And then Julia Garner plays her other daughter, Tara. And Julia Garner, people will know from Ozark. She's the kind of young woman with the blonde hair and that, who's, you know, that one.
Right? Yeah, okay.
And basically, they don't like John and they take immediately against him and ultimately are proven right too, right? Because he is Dirty John. He's not exactly living up to who he's pretending to be. And some stuff goes down. Now, to offer any details would be a massive spoiler, right?
Okay, yeah.
So what you're looking for in this is ultimately entertainment value. And there is plenty of that on offer here, right? It is glossy, it's frothy, it's silly, it's bitchy, it's mean, but it's never interesting, right? You're never going to sit there and go, I'm absolutely flabbergasted at what has happened. All of the twists and turns are kind of signposted. You'll see all of them coming. It doesn't really explore in an interesting way how he manipulates her, or how, you know, or her neediness really for his manipulation, or any of that kind of thing. It's just a very straightforward soap opera, right? Now, that's fine. There's entertainment to be wrung out of that. And certainly, like, I'm sure there are probably people who like it more than I did. But for me, it just is relatively simple and straightforward. It's kind of the ideal stuff to do your ironing to.
Yeah. Right? Actually, funny enough, because a few people are talking about the TV show and the podcast. Claire says, I listened to a few episodes of Dirty John before I gave up.
Yeah,
I gave up
as well.
It was so obvious. The woman came across like a real idiot, and you can see the twists a mile off. I couldn't bear it. The show looks just as bad. I will not be watching. Terrible podcast. I'm guessing a terrible show. I've watched a few episodes of Dirty John. I find it so gripping, says Ruth. Eric Bana is brilliant at playing the creep. What a load of codswallop that was. Watch two episodes and then watch the last one in fast forward. Horrendous. As for catastrophe, good ending. Leaves it open. Go Sharon Horgan. And that's from Claire, who's eating a bag of fizzy jellies and about to do yoga. And someone else says, watching the first two episodes of Dirty John last night, riveting. They say so. Different, yes, and a few other comments on that last episode of Catastrophe, and I won't read them out because, you know, there are other things that are kind of, you go, wow. Yeah, particularly what you're referring to there in Keo. Right, we'll move on to our third show. This is Curfew. It starts tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on Sky One. Here's a clip.
The curfew will begin in 10 minutes. Breaking the terms of the curfew is a serious offence.
Take a look around you. You didn't just opt out of the curfew, of the rules and restrictions that come with it. You opted in. Nothing about the race is easy, but it is going to be worth it. Because at the end of tonight, one team is going to come with me to a place with hope. Race yourselves free.
My God, that's loud. There was a movie a gazillion years ago called Death Race 2000, okay, which was set in the year 2000, which at the time was the future,
yes,
which sounded a bit like that, which has been remade as Death Race and stuff.
Right, yes.
That's what this is.
Yeah, so now I knew absolutely nothing about this before I sat down to watch five episodes I've watched of the eight last night, because I'd only seen a billboard, and that was the entirety of my knowledge about this. So I knew nothing going in. And I will say I was really struck by the ambition of this show, because it sort of builds this whole world mythology very quickly and then ultimately subverts it. So yeah, it's a death race, right? It's these people living in a sort of post-societal collapse London, where they go to great lengths to talk about, you know, the show is called Curfew and there is a curfew, but actually they don't really go into that much details about what happens if you stay out of the curfew and so on. But they are living, I can't really say how or why society has collapsed without really tipping over a big spoiler. But suffice it to say, if you don't stay in at night, bad things can happen to you. And these people have decided that they want to take part in this race created by an eccentric billionaire. And the race is London to the Scottish Highlands. And if whoever arrives first wins place in sanctuary on this island that he has created. Now, what I found very odd about this is how, like, sort of flippantly it jumps through genres. It mashes absolutely everything together. What I really liked about it is you have a very Game of Thrones-esque kill your darlings going on here, where anyone can be killed at any moment.
Okay.
And I admire, you know, any show that has the bravery to take people who you are expecting to be following for eight episodes and very quickly, you know,
Yeah, and there's enough names to kill off.
There are a lot of names. So you have Billy Zane, Miranda Richardson, Adam Brody, Sean Bean, Adrian Lester, amongst many others. And I will say it surprised me a lot, right? And I like being surprised because it keeps you interested.
But it's basically just one big race, though, isn't
it? It is one big race. And I think that is actually a slight failing of the show, right? So it's all supposed to take place across this one night in London. Now, it does jump backwards in time to sort of build the mythology and world around that with flashbacks to various things that have happened. Some of them are very successful, I would say, particularly the episode that centres on Rose Williams' Faith, which explains her role as a babysitter, is really gripping and very excellent. But some of them are a bit more boring, right? That's part and parcel of it. Does it need 8 episodes to sustain it? No. Like, these kind of movies like Death Race 2000 all take place in, what, 2 hours or 90 minutes?
Yeah.
And that's fine, because ultimately what you know is people are going to get killed, right?
Yeah.
Do I need to get so emotionally attached to people that are going to constantly be, you know, killed in the next scene? Probably not. Could they have done this in 5 episodes? It would have been better. I would say yes. But I admire its ambition, and I think it is certainly intriguing and definitely worth a punt tomorrow night.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Chris on Twitter. Now, I'm not sure if this is true or not, because this is the first I heard of it, but I'm somehow not surprised about it. He says, what's your opinion on Netflix cancelling the Irish-made Night Flyers after one season because of low viewing? Now, he quotes the figures 400,000 to 650,000 per episode, while it only dropped 3 weeks ago.
Well,
now,
it actually
I don't
was
know
on
if Netflix gives figures out.
So the thing is, it was made by Sci-Fi in the US. It's actually a Sci-Fi Netflix collaboration.
Ah, yeah.
So those could be the Sci-Fi figures, and they could be the ones
blocking,
you know, pulling the
Sci-Fi who cancelled it, not Netflix.
Potentially.
Yes, I've just been told,
I'm not surprised. I didn't finish it myself.
Ah, I didn't. I wanted to kick in the television. Because it ended on a, of course we're going to have a second series.
Okay.
And you know what? The fact that they didn't is no more than they deserve. Oh, God. It was, you know, it was, because I really, really wanted it to be good because it was made in Limerick. But
yeah.
it was
no,
just
I think it's a good showcase for the studio.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Not for anyone else.
No, it was just, unfortunately, it was just nonsense. Apart from something that isn't nonsense is the TV review that James Dempsey does every week. James, thanks a million
Thank
for coming
you.
Into us. We'll take a break after that. Why do we fight? 53106 is our text number. James Dempsey is still with us. Has James ever reviewed a chat show? I'd love for him to review Late Late or Graham Norton. I think you have.
I definitely have reviewed Graham. And what I always say about Graham is what I love about the Graham Norton show is how it doesn't matter who the guests are, the least famous one could be the one that is the best on the night.
Yeah.
And what I always admire about him is his researchers find anecdotes about the people that I've never heard before.
It's really well produced, actually.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that's him as well. Like, he's a really good producer.
It's great. Yeah. I love it.
The question everybody's asking today, they've been asking it since it finished, but a lot of people text Ian today to want to know your opinion. And we have to be careful because there are people who won't have seen the end of Catastrophe, or even, you know, there may well be people just plowing through it now, through all the series now. Anyway, for instance, Marit says, did James finish Catastrophe? I have a hole in my heart since it ended. When are we allowed to talk about the ending? Because I have a theory that I would love to put to James. I'm not going to read out that theory. Can you ask James? A lot of people asking what you thought. Let's put it this way. There is an ending I won't describe.
Right.
Some people have taken a more negative interpretation of that. Others thought it was more positive and metaphorical.
Yeah. I mean,
where do you kind of
so
sit
I sat down and watched the final episode, and in that sort of final scene, as things began to unfold, I was thinking, where is this going? Like, this all seems very strange.
Yeah.
And was expecting it to take a turn that I don't know if it did or didn't take ultimately, right?
Yeah.
I think it keeps you on your toes with that show. I think it's sort of on brand for them to completely mess with what you expect of how a sitcom should end. But I ultimately think it has stuck with me as a sitcom ending, which you can't say is the way I would talk about every single one, you know?
Yeah, and it was completely in keeping with what, you know, no matter what way you interpret it, it was saying, well, things ain't going to get any better. This is it. This is life. You're stuck with it. Right. Okay. We'll move on to our second show of the day. It's called Dirty John. All episodes of Dirty John are on streaming now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
Hello?
Hey, I'm here for Deborah.
Are you delivering a package?
No, I'm John.
Oh.
It's a really nice place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like that on purpose.
Deborah said she lives with her daughter, Veronica. Is that you?
My mom said the guy she's going out with tonight is a doctor. Is that you?
It is me.
Hmm. You can look at that just fine with your eyes. You don't need to touch it. It's breakable.
There you go. That's Dirty John. This is based on a true story. Yes. But it's a kind of a true crime.
It is.
Thing,
it's also
really
an adaptation of a podcast from 2017 that was released by the LA Times and was a big kind of, riding the serial wave of true crime podcasting, downloaded 10 million times, I think, in 2017. So chances are people who are listening are already familiar with the story. So this is a dramatized version of it, and it comes from a woman named Alexandra Cunningham, who whose biggest sort of title that you would know is Desperate Housewives. And okay. I think it's, if you liked Desperate Housewives, you're going to like this as well, right? Because it's cut from that kind of soapy Lifetime cloth, right? Now I have been known to like shows like that as well. I love I love the American Crime Story, the People versus OJ. I even love the Versace one, not quite as much, but I did like it a lot. And this is in a similar vein, but not as good, right? So this is like a good filler while you're waiting for something else to come along, because it's not quite dirty enough, really, right? In the sense that you want it to be just that little bit more juicy or interesting than it actually turns out to be. Now, it's not bad, right? So you get the story essentially revolves around a woman named Deborah Newell, I think, who's played by Connie Britton, who people will know from everything that she's been in for years.
But even having Connie Britton in it gives it that kind of soapy aspect.
Yes,
really.
Definitely. Yes. Yeah. And she's the sort of, I guess, 40, maybe on the pushing 50 something divorcee in Newport Beach in California. She's a very wealthy and successful interior decorator, but struggling in the dating life. And there's a great montage of her going on all these dates with these terrible men that actually really sets the scene very well for why, when she meets John, who's played by Eric Bana, who's this handsome older, 40 something man, suddenly she's, very much like interested, and why she would be interested in him. But her two daughters, who are played by Juno Temple, who we heard there as Veronica, who is particularly good, as in the best you've ever seen her. And then Julia Garner plays her other daughter, Tara. And Julia Garner, people will know from Ozark. She's the kind of young young woman with the blonde hair and that, who's, that one. basically, they don't like John, and they take immediately against him. And ultimately are proven right too, right? Because he is Dirty John. He's not exactly living up to who he's pretending to be. And some stuff goes down. Now, to offer any details would be a massive spoiler, right?
Okay, yeah.
So what you're looking for in this is ultimately entertainment value. And there is plenty of that on offer here, right? It is glossy, it's frothy, it's silly, it's bitchy, it's mean, but it's never interesting, right? You're never going to sit there and go, I'm absolutely flabbergasted at what has happened. All of the twists and turns are kind of signposted. You'll see all of them coming. It doesn't really explore in an interesting way how he manipulates her, or how, or her neediness really for his manipulation, or any of that kind of thing. It's just a very straightforward soap opera, right? Now, that's fine. There's entertainment to be wrung out of that, and certainly, like, I'm sure there are probably people who like it more than I did, but for me it just is relatively simple and straightforward. It's kind of the ideal stuff to do your ironing to.
Yeah. Actually, funny enough, because a few people are talking about the TV show and the podcast. Claire says, I listened to a few episodes of Dirty John before I gave up.
Yeah,
it was so
as well.
Obvious. The woman came across like a real idiot, and you can see the twists a mile off. I couldn't bear it. The show looks just as bad. I will not be watching. Terrible podcast. I'm guessing a terrible show. I've watched a few episodes of Dirty John. I find it so gripping, says Ruth. Eric Bana is brilliant at playing the creep. What a load of codswallop that was. Watch two episodes and then watch the last one in fast forward. Horrendous. As for catastrophe, good ending. Leaves it open. Go Sharon Horgan. And that's from Claire, who's eating a bag of fizzy jellies and about to do yoga. And someone else says, watching the first two episodes of Dirty John last night, riveting. They say so. Different, yes, and a few other comments on that last episode of Catastrophe, and I won't read them out because you know there are other things that are kind of, you go wow, particularly what you're referring to there in Keo. Right, we'll move on to our third show. This is Curfew. It starts tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on Sky One. Here's a clip.
The curfew will begin in 10 minutes. Breaking the terms of the curfew is a serious offence.
Take a look around you. You didn't just opt out of the curfew, of the rules and restrictions that come with it. You opted in. Nothing about the race is easy, but it is going to be worth it. Because at the end of tonight, one team is going to come with me to a place with hope. Race yourselves free.
My God, that's loud. There was a movie a gazillion years ago called Death Race 2000, okay, which was set in the year 2000, which at the time was the future,
yes,
which sounded a bit like that, which has been remade as Death Race and stuff.
Right, yes.
That's what this is.
Yeah, so now I knew absolutely nothing about this before I sat down to watch five episodes I've watched of the eight last night, because I'd only seen a billboard, and that was the entirety of my knowledge about this. So I knew nothing going in. And I will say I was really struck by the ambition of this show, because it sort of builds this whole world mythology very quickly and then ultimately subverts it. So yeah, it is it's a death race, right? It's these people living in a sort of post-societal collapse London, where they go to great lengths to talk about, you know, the show is called Curfew and there is a curfew, but actually they don't really go into that much details about what happens if you stay out of the curfew and so on. But they are living, I can't really say how or why society has collapsed without really tipping over a big spoiler. But suffice it to say, if you don't stay in at night, bad things can happen to you. And these people have decided that they want to take part in this race created by an eccentric billionaire. And in the race is London to the Scottish Highlands. And if whoever arrives first wins place in sanctuary on this island that he has created. Now, what I found very odd about this is how, like, sort of flippantly it jumps through genres. It mashes absolutely everything together. What I really liked about it is you have a very Game of Thrones-esque kill your darlings going on here, where anyone can be killed at any moment.
Okay.
And I admire, you know, any show that has the bravery to take people who you are expecting to be following for 8 episodes and very quickly, you know,
yeah, and there's
them.
Enough names to kill off.
There are a lot of names. So you have Billy Zane, Miranda Richardson, Adam Brody, Sean Bean, Adrian Lester, amongst many others. And I will say it surprised me a lot, right? And I like being surprised because it keeps you interested.
But it's basically just one big race, though, isn't it?
It is one big race. And I think that is actually a slight failing of the show, right? So it's all supposed to take place across this one night in London. Now, it does jump backwards in time to sort of build the mythology and world around that, with flashbacks to various things that have happened. Some of them are very successful, I would say, particularly the episode that centres on Rose Williams' faith, which explains her role as a babysitter, is really gripping and very excellent. But some of them are a bit more boring, right? That's part and parcel of it. Does it need 8 episodes to sustain it? No. Like, these kind of movies like Death Race 2000 all take place in, what, 2 hours or 90 minutes?
Yeah.
And that's fine, because ultimately what you know is people are going to get killed, right?
Yeah.
Do I need to get so emotionally attached to people that are going to constantly be, you know, killed in the next scene? Probably not. Could they have done this in 5 episodes? It would have been better. I would say yes. But I admire its ambition, and I think it is certainly intriguing and definitely worth a punt tomorrow night.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Chris on Twitter. Now, I'm not sure if this is true or not, because this is the first I heard of it, but I'm somehow not surprised about it. He says, what's your opinion on Netflix cancelling the Irish-made Night Flyers after one season because of low viewing? Now, he quotes the figures 400,000 to 650,000 per episode, while it only dropped 3 weeks ago.
Well,
I don't know if Netflix gives figures out.
So the thing is, it was made by Sci-Fi in the US. It's actually a Sci-Fi Netflix collaboration.
Ah, yeah.
So those could be the Sci-Fi figures, and they could be the ones pulling the...
Yeah, Sci-Fi who cancelled it, not Netflix.
Potentially.
Yes, I've just been told,
I'm not surprised. I didn't finish it myself.
Ah, I didn't. I wanted to kick in the television. Because it ended on a, oh, of course we're going to have a second series. Okay. And you know what? The fact that they didn't is no more than they deserve. Oh, God. It was, you know, it was, because I really, really wanted it to be good because it was made in Limerick. But yeah. it was
no,
just
I think
nonsense.
It's a good showcase for the studio.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Not for anyone else.
Yeah, no, it was just, unfortunately, it was just nonsense. Apart from something that isn't nonsense is the TV review that James Dempsey does every week. James, thanks a million
Thank
for coming
you.
Into us. We'll take a break after that. Why do we fight?
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.